Off the ball, rugby.
Obviously, it's a shocking refereeing decision.
The other thing as well, I don't know if anyone picked up on the Bulls' first try. Did no one mention the quick tap taken off your man's knee?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
And you're welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to seven. We hope you're doing great around the country. Lovely weather ahead this week. And what is coming up on the show today? Well, Liverpool only need a point now to clinch the Premier League title. They play Tottenham Hotspur from 4:30 this afternoon. We got a live and exclusive commentary of what's expected to be a celebration on Merseyside. Nathan Murphy and the former Republic of Ireland boss Brian Kerr will be at Anfield for us. That's the second of two live commentaries. The first, Manchester United's match away to Bournemouth. We're going to have Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy describing that one from 2:00. The Championship rolls on in Gaelic games. Munster and Leinster round robin matches in hurling, and provincial semi-finals in Leinster and Ulster in football down for a decision today. We're going to be across all the scores and the stories when they happen, and with the FA Cup semi-final, AIL finals in rugby and snooker to update you on. There's a lot to go through. We're going to start the news round with Monaghan's finest, Shane Hannan, and Westmeath's finest, Adrian Barry. Afternoon, gents.
Afternoon. Thanks. How's it going? Keeping? All good.
Liverpool, not a city that you'd associate with the monarchy, but set for their coronation later.
It's been a long time coming. It's kind of been a teetering towards the end of the Premier League season, a bit boring for everyone else, but I'm sure Liverpool fans and certainly Liverpool fans heading to Anfield today are watching from here at home in Ireland. Will be absolutely buzzing. Doesn't matter how you win the Premier League title. Obviously, there are more dramatic ways to win it, but at the end of the day, it is at the year 2025 added to the roll of honour, and what, level on 20 Premier League titles now with Manchester United. Didn't think Liverpool would do it in Arne Slot's first year, I have to be honest. I'm not sure many did. But the manner in which they've gone about it has been nothing short of impressive, without being ultra, ultra dominant. Because we saw the way they've exited cup competitions. Champions League as well would have been disappointing. FA Cup and Carabao Cup. But it has to be said, they've been the most consistent team in the league. And when you have Mo Salah up front, when you have Alisson in goals, when you have a player of the calibre of Virgil van Dijk at the heart of your defence, turns out that that's pretty important.
It was always going to take something spectacular. At a certain point in the season, it emerged, obviously, that it was always going to take something exceptionally spectacular of unparalleled happening to have occurred for them to throw the thing away. And, like, you know, they've just sort of calmly sort of built their way towards it, obviously. And I don't know. The only thing is, like, Tottenham sort of, what is it with Tottenham? Like, they'll always do the thing the exact opposite to what you expect. So what would that represent today, JD?
A win.
2-0 win for Tottenham.
Richarlison.
Ruin the party. Well, we were saying yesterday on Football Saturday that the you know, some fans have paid upwards of, I don't know what, maybe 5,000.
Yeah, but then I got another text yesterday that 750 quid was the was one of the other.
Then if Spurs win today, that's
Well, look, I can't see Tottenham, and with Bodø/Glimt on Thursday, I can't see Tottenham having full attention on this subconsciously. I can only see an early goal and a Liverpool win.
John Aldridge piece in the Sunday World today, where he talks about, like, he's seen a few critics say that it's been a second rate Premier League season. Liverpool have been lucky to cash in on every other team's failing falling away, but that's total nonsense. He says that they're jealous of Liverpool's success, and you know, they're trying to belittle it in some way, but their arguments are ridiculous. I don't know, it has been a good season, like a strange season, like with the emergence of
City have an off season, then you're thinking, well, Arsenal are going to be the next team in line, but they're possibly going to more likely to win the Champions League now than the Premier League they might have expected to win. Mm-hmm. And then that then creates a vacuum, and Liverpool have filled the vacuum very effectively with Klopp's team, you know, adding in Chiesa, but with Klopp's team. But Slot has done amazingly well. Set out a stall, is calm, has never looked like he's been carrying a burden as the manager of Liverpool Football Club in front of the cameras, whether internally he's feeling differently. 2 defeats, 27 goals for Salah. Back on their perch, 20 titles, same as United. There are a lot of Irish Reds who are going to have some week starting today if they, as we expect, get at least a point.
Will Slot go on to win more than Klopp?
Well, Klopp should have won more. Look, Man City's 115 charges are coming down the line as well, and maybe he'll be handed some retroactively, but you know, to get what, 99 points and not win the Premier League title was just madness. Obviously spoke volumes to what Man City did that season, but Klopp certainly should have won more. It feels like he did win more,
He's won of everything, wasn't it?
He's won. And he has won everything, which puts him in the high caliber of managers, in fairness to him. But yeah, he could certainly win more Premier League titles than Klopp.
That's not a bad start.
No.
It's a strange one because there is a bit of a Shankly Paisley comparison with this that I think was somebody's reference in the papers yesterday that Shankly was an icon. He was an institution at Anfield. He was bigger than just being a football manager. Mm-hmm. Klopp was the same.
Yeah.
Bridging that 30-year gap. And now it feels like Slot is a more Paisley type, that he's the continuity. But Paisley was a more successful manager when it came to trophies than Shankly was. So,
yeah.
Look, I mean, we're living in a different world now where people don't have patience. Liverpool seem to be well run. And be careful what you wish for, even if they have a couple of disappointing seasons. I mean, that it's surely set up now for if they make good signings, they've got the two lads in, Van Dijk and Salah, to build on.
There must be. There will be a part of Liverpool fans today. Will be a huge celebration. You expect JD? Who knows? See what happens. But if not today, then another day. But there must be a significant part of Liverpool fans. There must be a big disappointment with the Champions League, obviously, in the way that went, and you know, a classic, obviously, that would be fit a final. But at the same time, you know, they're right there. Didn't deserve probably to go out at that stage, and could listen. This happens to teams all the time, but. One major trophy in your first season is certainly not a bad start, but they were quite close. Despite going out at the stage they went to, they would have been quite close, I'd say, to two major trophies.
Liverpool are also a very, I know Manchester United and Everton fans particularly won't agree with this listening in, but they're a likeable club. You know, it is that working class nature, the anti.
Well, you can't have it because you're United. But Adrian, would you have a soft spot for Liverpool? Would you have
absolutely?
It?
Yeah. So I'm agnostic in this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lapsed Manchester United and Everton fan. So I don't know what sort of
wow, right? Like, more clubs than Tiger
Woods. Well, I should technically doubly hate Liverpool, but no. I did offer this idea when they won it, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years ago in COVID 2020. That, like, you know, surely a lot of people are happy to see Liverpool get over the line, because are they not a lot of team? You know, people's second. In inverted commas, team. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that was roundly rubbished as a load of nonsense. But personally, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, they win another 2 or 3 in the next 2 or 3 years, then your allegiances will change. But I don't mind seeing Man City not win it as well as another.
I have a soft spot for Liverpool. I think there's a Celtic kind of connection with the city and with Ireland. I think they've had a hard time given what happened to them in the 80s from the state.
Yeah.
And. It's been a city that has often been forgotten. And I think there's a real, have you been to Anfield, there's a real earthy connection between the city and its football club. It's like Anfield to me is a cathedral.
Yeah.
And I don't have to be a Liverpool fan to say that.
There's also all the Irish legends that have played there. There's the way in which, even for Manchester United supporters, the way in which Liverpool fans treat the Munich anniversary. And that's reciprocated, you like to think, by United fans for Hillsborough. And also, you remember the minutes applause they did 7 minutes into a game between, you know, I think it was between United and Liverpool, when Cristiano Ronaldo lost his baby. You know, it was just a touch of class from Liverpool fans when that happened. So there's been moments where you look back and think, well, that was a lovely touch.
You have the man of the moment on the slot now?
Yeah, we do indeed, because it's the story of the day. I suppose Liverpool can secure their second Premier League title in 5 years this afternoon. The Reds just 1 point away, and a draw or a win against Tottenham Hotspur would be enough to be crowned champions in their new manager's first year in charge, as we've been saying. Kick-off at Anfield, 4:30, live and exclusive commentary of that game and Off the Ball this afternoon from Anfield. And Liverpool boss Arne Slot, speaking to Sky Sports during the week, discussed how good you have to be to win the Premier League.
So to be good is one thing, but to be consistent is the second thing. Consistent in quality, consistency in work rate. Because this league, you have to bring the best out of yourself every 3 days. Where in some other leagues you can do this maybe once in 4 or 5 games, and the other 3 or 4 you just win by quality. This game you can only win with intensity and quality. So every team that wins the Premier League should get a lot of credits for that. In my opinion, even if you finish second or third, you should get a lot of credits, because never before, I think, there were so many teams that could end up top 3, top 4.
The slot machine has struck gold, and let's check in now with our match commentator Stephen Doyle ahead of Manchester United's game away to Bournemouth, kicking off on the south coast of England at 2. Afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, John.
And you've been doing Premier League commentaries for us all season, Stephen. How do you rank this Liverpool team and their achievement?
I think a lot of the praise has to go to Arne Slot, because he has basically taken the same squad that Jurgen Klopp had last season, and he's won a Premier League title with them. Listening to you guys talking there about you know, what kind of manager is he, and comparing to Bob Paisley, I think it's a good comparison. I was thinking back to the time when David Moyes took over at Manchester United, and you look through that Manchester United squad that David Moyes had in the 2013-14 season, and it was littered with Premier League winners and really top quality players like David De Gea, Raphael, Patrice Evra, Rio Ferdinand. You had Juan Mata, Wayne Rooney, Ryan Giggs. Nemanja Vidic was there as well still. And he completely struggled. Robin Van Persie, I should mention, of course. A lot of really top quality players. It was a really good Manchester United squad. And we all know what happened to David Moyes. Now, Arne Slot came in from the Eredivisie. He didn't have the kind of profile that David Moyes had when he went to the Premier League, and a lot of people would have been maybe looking down their nose at Arne Slot, as a lot of, I suppose, English footballing supporters do when a manager comes in from somewhere like the Dutch League. And what he's to actually go into that dressing room and to summon the respect that he obviously has from those players has been an achievement in itself. Because it would have been so easy for him to go in there and for those players not to respect him, because he hadn't really achieved a huge amount aside from you know, what he did in the Dutch league, and I think that's been pretty phenomenal. And as I said, the fact that he has taken the same players, he's changed the system from a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1. He's had to deal with a few off the field issues, such as the contracts, like the Virgil van Dijk and Mo Salah and Trent Alexander contracts have just seemed to be going on forever and ever, and he handled that really well, I think, with the media. And also he managed to get a tune out of Trent Alexander all season while he's had all that distraction going on in the background. He's also coached players really well. Like, we've all seen Ryan Gravenberch this season. Now, look, he looked a little bit tired over the last number of weeks, but I do think Gravenberch needs a better pre-season this summer, and he is getting that little bit more mature, and his body might be able to do what Slot requires him to do more next season. But he's absolutely transformed Gravenberch. Like, Gravenberch was viewed by Klopp as a kind of an inside left midfielder, and Slot has now turned him into the man who controls that Liverpool midfield. Everything goes through him, and he's got Alexis McAllister beside him, as, you know, he's the nuts and bolts man, but who can also add a bit of creativity to that Liverpool midfield. He needs to get more from Szoboszlai. I think that's down to Szoboszlai himself. I think that's a personal situation. I think Szoboszlai actually getting the captaincy for Hungary has hung a little bit heavy on his shoulders, and I think that has affected his performance as well as his club. But someone else I would look at, and a bit closer to home, is Conor Bradley. Conor Bradley did come in under Jurgen Klopp. I suppose he raised a few eyebrows because he looked like a really good defender, had a bit of pace. But the way Slot has used him this season has been nothing short of brilliant, because he doesn't have that passing range that Alexander-Arnold has, but he does have, as he has pace, and he also has footballing intelligence, and he makes these brilliant runs into the box to join the attack. He can go outside the defender, or he can come inside into the inside left channel, and he adds so much to that Liverpool attack. And as I said, a different player to Trent Alexander-Arnold, but he can also defend. So I think across the board, John, there's just so many things about this Liverpool team that have been good this season. Now, granted, look, the last few weeks they've had a few bad defeats. They went out of the Champions League to Paris Saint-Germain, a tie that they could have definitely won. They lost the League Cup final to Newcastle United. I just feel there was a huge momentum behind Newcastle that day, and they really went for it, and Liverpool just weren't able to cope, and that was quite understandable. And they've had a few hiccups along the way, losing to Plymouth in the FA Cup as well. It wasn't ideal, although I don't think they were really interested in winning that competition. But to do what he's done with exactly the same squad, and for all those other reasons I mentioned, I think it's been an incredible, incredible season for Arne Slot, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he will do in the summer as regards to transfers and new signings, and to see how much they'll add to that squad. Because if they can add the right players, maybe four or five in different positions, I think this Liverpool team could be there for another couple of seasons. Granted, I think we'll see a better Man City next season. Arsenal will still be there as well, and you'd like to think there might be one or two of the other big clubs who normally would compete will be a little bit better next season. But listen, you have to give a huge amount of credit to the Liverpool players for adapting to their manager, for giving them the respect, and his tactical nous as well, we should say as well, his in-game changes as regard tactics and that kind of stuff has really been to the fore as well this season. So I think they've been really, I wouldn't say they've been the best Premier League champions I've seen over the last couple of decades, but they're definitely up there with some of the best.
Yeah, solid Liverpool team this season, Stephen. So that's Liverpool, your own game, Manchester United, Bournemouth. We got the teams?
Yes, indeed. Manchester United underdogs going into this game against Bournemouth, you'll have to say, this afternoon, John. Bournemouth's last game against Crystal Palace, a scoreless draw, something they needed quite badly because they are still competing for those European spots. They start the day in 10th position on 49. That means that they're 8 points behind Aston Villa, although they have this game in hand, could bring them to within 5 points. Point to seventh position. They had gone three matches, or they have gone now three matches unbeaten after three consecutive defeats, including that defeat to City in the FA Cup quarter-finals. So unsurprisingly, their manager Areola has gone with an unchanged team. So it's Arrizabalaga in goal for them, the captain Smith at right back, then it's Zabarni and Housen in the centre-half positions with Kerkez on the left. Scott plays in midfield alongside Tyler Adams, and then on the wings it's Semenyo on the right, Ouattara on the left, Kluivert playing in the number 10 position behind Evan Nielsen. Manchester United, of course, losing to Wolves last weekend. No shock, really, I don't think, because they'd really used up all that energy in the win against Lyon in the Europa League. And the manager, Ruben Amorim, made a lot of changes last week. And he's made five changes to his team this week. So coming in are Harry Maguire, Lenny Yoro, Casemiro, Luke Shaw, and the skipper, Bruno Fernandes. Dropping to the bench are Fredriksen, Lindelof, Eriksen, Harry Amis and Ugarte. So the United team lining out with Onana in goal, Mazraoui, Maguire and Yoro, the back three, Dorgu right wing back, Shaw left wing back, Casemiro and Mainu central midfield, Garnacho and Fernandes playing in support of the striker Rasmus Højlund. That defeat to Wolves, John, last week means that if they lose to Bournemouth today, they will have been beaten home and away by six different clubs. The last time that happened was in the 1933-34 season.
Oh, that's Herbert Chapman time, I think it is, around then. Yeah.
Good memory.
Yeah, yeah. thanks, Stephen. We'll chat to you a bit later on. And Manchester United, I think, like Spurs, banking everything. All the chips are in the Europa League basket. Speaking about clubs that you got a soft spot for, I was at Crystal Palace Brighton in 2019 at Selhurst Park and loved the whole soul of the place. They brought an eagle onto the pitch before the game. They're cheerleaders and it was just great fun. And they won yesterday, 3-0 against Aston Villa in the Cup as a maverick. Mm. And there's a real soul to the place. And I was delighted to see them win as much as Aston Villa are, you know, club that would be very much likable as well.
Yeah.
They have Villa have that sort of hark back to the Irish thing as well, that I do think people have sort of, and there's an awful lot of Villa fans obviously around this office, but Palace are one of those clubs. Right? It's a bit, certainly a bit surprising, mind you, the level, the scale of the win.
Yeah.
Given how far Aston Villa have come.
FA Cup finals twice, both defeats to Manchester United.
1990, 2016, yeah. Yeah,
famous Adam Pardew dance.
1990, Adam Pardew scored in the semi-final against Liverpool, and there was a massive shock at the time. It was a 4-3 win at Villa Park, and then Ian Wright, Mark Bright, remember in the...
Oh, yeah.
That was obviously the trophy that saved Alex Ferguson.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it was the trophy then that Louis Valhalla won and was sacked.
That's right.
Straight afterwards. Yeah. So, you know, Palace do have a... They could be playing the other Manchester. It's Nottingham Forest against Manchester City today.
Yeah, looking forward to this game as well. Forest and Man City facing off in that second FA Cup semi-final this afternoon. Forest looking to reach their first decider since 1991, while Manchester City looking to return to Wembley for the third year in a row, beating finalists last year, of course, to Manchester United. There is a 4:30 kickoff in London for that game in Crystal Palace. As we said, await the winners in the final. Arsenal defender Katie McCabe says they have what it takes to overturn a first-leg deficit against Lyon and reach the final of the Women's Champions League. The hosts of a 2-1 advantage going into this evening's return fixture in the French City at 5 p.m. Irish time. At 2 o'clock today, Barcelona arrive at Stamford Bridge with a 4-1 lead, with Chelsea needing victory, a big victory, to keep their hopes of a quadruple alive. Wrexham's Hollywood story under Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney continues thanks to a third straight promotion. They've gone up to the Championship with a 3-0 victory over Charlton Athletic yesterday. Cardiff will play in League One next season after a goalless draw with West Brom, relegated them from the Championship yesterday as well. Plymouth, Argyle are likely to join them, barring a huge swing in goal difference, despite their 2-1 win at Preston yesterday. Hull are the third team in the drop zone after losing 1-0 to fellow strugglers Derby County, while Luton Town still aren't safe despite beating playoff hopefuls Coventry by 1-0. The Copa del Rey was on last night as well. I'm sure many people were watching this as well. Jules Koundé scored an extra time screamer as Barcelona beat Real Madrid to win the Copa del Rey in a thrilling Clásico in Seville. It was remarkably a first Clásico final in a major tournament since 2014, when Gareth Bale scored a fantastic late winner for Real in a 2-1 victory. England midfielder Jude Bellingham sent off after the final whistle for angrily confronting officials. I don't know if you lads have been following this story, but it's fairly disgraceful behaviour, you'd have to say, from Real Madrid. So in the build-up to this game, the referee, Ricardo de Burgos, Real's TV channel published a video criticising the referee in various aspects. They obviously feel that like they have history with him. As they've done in the past with other officials, released a video criticising him. And the referee then has an emotional news conference on Friday before the game, where he talks about the impact the likes of that has on him. Then the club distributed highly critical press releases that evening, but denied reports that they would pull out of the game. There was thought that maybe Real might pull out of the game because of the referee. So obviously the referee's decisions last night were going to be highly honed in on. And to be honest, Real were going mental at every single decision the referee made, none of which were, you would say, were controversial. So there were offsides. Mbappe was denied a penalty, but there was a clear offside in the build-up. And then 96th minute, game is at 2-2. Asensio slides in and Rafinha. Referee points to the spot, but then there's a check of over 3 minutes and he reverses the decision, books Rafinha for diving. And then at the end of the 120 minutes, Real, obviously frustrated that they're about to lose the final, boils over. Mbappe tries to shrug off an opponent. The referee gives a free kick against him. The Real bench then, several players running onto the pitch. Rudiger appears to throw something at the official as well. Rudiger, Vazquez sent off. Bellingham then sent off after the full-time whistle for an aggressive attitude. But just the whole vibe of it was off from before the game from Real Madrid.
For a club that is the establishment of the game, they act like upstart punks at times.
Yeah.
And I see there on the BBC today that Carlo Ancelotti's possibly in talks at Brazil about taking over for the World Cup in 2026. You think he's definitely out the door? Whether it's Alonso or Zidane, well, it won't be Zidane, but Alonso or Klopp or whoever's going to go to the Bernabeu, because we're into the Florentino Perez cycle now. The Galacticos come in, Mbappe's come in. I know he scored a lot of goals, but has he enhanced the area? And Ancelotti to Brazil, I mean, I don't for the life of me remember another coach from another nation managing Brazil. But no, that it's got that desperate in Argentina's shadow for the World Cup, which they have not won for, what, 24 years, by the time we come around to the United States next year.
Jesus, was that 24 years ago?
Yeah.
02.
From Everton to Madrid to Brazil, it's a well-trodden path.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Very un-Ancelotti move, I think, all that stuff that you were talking about there. It doesn't feel scream like that it's coming from something like him. He feels like...
In fairness, he kind of stood there on the sideline, very Ancelotti-like, with kind of the arms crossed, not really getting involved.
Raised eyebrow,
much. Yeah. Nothing, but the players' behaviour was disgraceful. It just leaves a sour taste in the mouth. But releasing videos before a game, do you know about a referee? Madness.
I was catching up on all the matches yesterday. So what, Armagh winning by a point against Tyrone, and a buzzer beater from Rory Grugan.
Yeah.
Dublin beating Wexford in the hurling. John Heatherton with 2-3. And Dublin have two wins out of two, and they're playing Antrim, so they're in a really good spot.
Mm.
And Keith Roster unhappy with the penalty that Dublin had. Sean Curry didn't feel it went over the line. And there's a goal line technology probably debate out of that. And then Galway, I suppose, recovering from their defeat in Kilkenny to beat Offaly quite comfortably in Tullamore. I've just got a feel in my bones, lads, about today. There's going to be a shock in one of these three games. I mean, Louth Kildare, first of all, looks pretty evenly matched, and that's the game with most on it today.
What would be a shock even in that game?
Well, that's the one I didn't think there was going to be a shock.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure, because Kildare talked up an awful lot. You'd struggle to see the evidence of all of that. Louth, obviously, very much on the up.
Mm.
There's no shock, really.
Didn't fancy them.
There's no shock.
Bookies have Louth marginally as
favourites. This is everything, because this is Sam Maguire Charlton Cup for the winners and losers.
Yeah.
This one today. But then you have, like, Clare going down to Waterford, and Waterford will be first game of the season. Welsh Park, they'll be up for it. There'll be massive intensity there. Clare, I'm still not convinced, even though they got out of Ennis with a draw last week. Still not convinced. No Conor Cleary, no Shane O'Donnell. And you have then Tipperary, psychologically must feel in a great place, because they were hammered in the league final, and then they fronted up, they showed up against Limerick and they drew, and then they're going out of Cork again, and Cork have a lot of pressure on them now. Because if it doesn't go Cork's way today, where are they at? And then the other one, after 15 years, are Dublin suddenly vulnerable?
JD,
suddenly, no James McCarthy, no Brian Fenton, no Paul Mannion, no Jack McCaffrey. It's going to happen. By the law of averages, it's going to happen sometime.
I don't think
these things always happen when they're least.
You're on here suggesting that Clare and Dublin are going to beat today, JD. I'm not having either.
I'm saying there'll be a shock. Maybe one of the three might be a shock.
You don't actually think that, do you? Tipperary?
Well, I've got the feeling in my gut that one of these three games is going to be a shock. And if it's more than one, then it'll be a massive
Anthony
shock.
Anthony Nash was making, I was talking to him during the week on the show, and he was making the point that styles make fights, funny enough, the day that's in it. And Cork style does not suit Tipperary. So don't be getting too sort of excited about what happened last weekend. We'll see with the evidence of that in a couple of hours' time, but, you know, annoying Tipperary fans everywhere, obviously, in the process.
Yeah, but it's really a classic afternoon ahead of us, because Waterford and Clare, as we said, looking for their first wins of the Munster Hurling Championship this afternoon. The Deisha get their campaign underway at home to the All-Ireland champions, who come into the game off the back of that first round draw against Cork. Throw-in at Welsh Park at 2 p.m. this afternoon. That is followed by Tip's trip to Supervalu Páirc Uí Chaoimh to take on Cork, which gets underway from 4 p.m. Kilkenny can make it two wins from two in the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship this afternoon. The Cats are away to Antrim with the action underway from 2 p.m. at Corrigan Park. And in the football, Dublin and Meath renew their rivalry, as we said, in the Leinster Senior Football Championship later. The neighbours meet in a provincial semi-final at 4 p.m. in Portlaoise. That'll follow the other last four tie between Louth and Kildare. Huge game this afternoon. Throw in for that one at 2 p.m. in Tullamore. While Down and Donegal face off for a place in the Ulster Senior Football Final today. That game is at 3 p.m. It's at Chinooks Park in Clonus. And as we said, Armagh await the winners. And yeah, it was a really impressive performance from Armagh yesterday. 23 points to 22, probably the better team. Definitely the better team for the first 55 minutes. And then Tyrone came roaring back into it to lead by, what, 2 points late on. Armagh get the last 3 points of the game. That buzzer beater from Rory Grugan, who I know you sat down with not too long ago. He's a very impressive individual.
We'll send him a text.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a lovely guy as well.
Yeah,
Rory,
he is, yes,
you know, he's an absolute gent. And you could see the emotion that came out of him after that one, because to beat Tyrone.
And they win an Ulster 17 years.
Long time.
You'd expect Donegal Armagh again. You'd expect, with every respect to Dan, that it'll be Donegal Armagh again.
That'll be a brilliant final. Could go all the way to penalties again. Who knows? But yeah, 08, that replay win over Malachy O'Rourke's Fermanagh, the last time Armagh won an Ulster title. Far too long a gap for a county of their calibre. So
now, you're watching this clown show, the pair of you last night, were you?
Yeah, I'll mention it, and then we'll talk about it. Chris Eubank Jr. gave his family the bragging rights by beating Conor Benn 35 years after their fathers started one of boxing's biggest rivalries. He took victory by a unanimous decision at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Eubank Jr. was taken to hospital after the fight, but it is understood initial tests have come back clear. It is Benn's first defeat in 24 professional fights, and Eubank Jr. spoke in the ring to Sky Sports and DAZN after the fight.
First of all, we thank the one above. I knew I was capable of that. I just needed someone to bring me out, bring that out of me. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't expect that he'd be the guy to do that. But the fact that our fathers did what they did all those years ago, it brings out a different soul, a different spirit into you. And that's what we both showed here tonight.
The car pulls up beforehand. So I was sitting down last night to read through some of the papers today, get a bit of a handle on some of the articles, what was going on, you know, take a few notes, that sort of stuff. So I was kind of half paying attention. And then this thing pops up on one of my social media feeds of the limo pulling in at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Chris Eubank Jr. gets out and walks around the car. The passenger door flings open. And there he is. Welcome to Hollywood, baby.
What was he wearing?
He was wearing you'll have seen, there are other clips of him wearing the same jacket. It's a brown jacket with some sort of a faux fur cross chest situation going on. And he awkwardly follows the son, you know, all the way through. He's doing a pile of interviews in the bowels of the stadium beforehand, popping up on all the different media sites. And then, you know, the walk in takes about 10 minutes. Maybe I'm exaggerating that, but not much from Chris Eubank Jr. And he's behind him all the way. And Jr. wants him really close. He wants his hand on him. And it's a remarkable thing, because just days ago, Chris Eubank Sr. was out in the media saying, Junior, you're a disgrace. This is not the way I brought you up. This is not the way your mother brought you up. You are a disgrace to the family name. And you had Junior saying, I just wish Dad was here. And all of a sudden, he's there. And Sr. is asked, when did you know all this was happening? And the way Chris Eubank Sr. does, he gives a long answer, which doesn't answer the question. But it's theatre of the highest variety, and I'll challenge anybody to say otherwise.
Yeah.
Incredible.
The impression we all had was that they had...
It's theatre, but it's not boxing.
Well, that bit, but the fight itself was incredible.
It was a brilliant
fight. It was three rounds to Benn to begin with, and you thought, wow, this is the way this is going to go. Three rounds back for Eubank, and then fairly even all the way through, although I know the scorecards were a bit of a disparity on it in the end. But incredible, incredible fight.
Yeah, well, look, in fairness, and I know before you
interject
and get rid of all of our opinions here, but it was soap opera. Do you know what?
That's the whole point.
Boxing.
Yeah, and I've seen people walking out, you know what I'm saying, when he walked out of the car, he expected the EastEnders music to kick in at the end. It was just such a dramatic moment to see his father there, because the impression was they hadn't spoken in years.
That they hated each other.
But they hated each other. And that was the build-up. And like, there's the bloodline feud between the two of them. There's the fact that you know, Ben fails the drugs test in 2022 and cancels that opening fight, and there's the egg thrown in the face at a press conference, the build-up to this fight. And then you expect the fight to live up to it, and it did. 12 brilliant rounds, and as he said, the judges' scorecards probably a little bit wide, but at the same time, Eubank probably shaded the fight ultimately, and it was great entertainment, John.
I bow to the great Donald McRae, who is probably the doyen of boxing writing, who had a piece in The Guardian this week about the fight, and here's the quote: "Boxing was once covered by great writers and social commentators. It's now a marginalised sport where its humble hacks are denied access to the fighters while they wait to hear if they'll be granted accreditation. Those credentials can be withdrawn following criticism of Saudi Arabia or boxing's power brokers." If you took the names Ben and Eubank out of this, would it not be a run-of-the-mill fight? Conor Ben has had a failed drugs test in the past. Chris Eubank Jr. was fighting at a weight 21 pounds superior to Conor Ben. To me, the Hearn, I know Eddie Hearn, I think, was in Ben's camp this week. Mm. These guys are world-class marketeers. They could sell sand to the Arabs. And it's an apt thing to say, given the way Saudi Arabia have taken over the sport of professional boxing. These people are amazing marketeers and entertainment sellers. And that's
boxing. That's boxing. It's always been the same.
Boxing for me is Ali Frazier. It's Foreman Ali. It's Hagler Hearns. It's Duran Sugar Ray Leonard.
It will never be that again, though, unfortunately.
But their feats of boxing. And listen, sorry, Jenny, on your initial point, if the surnames weren't what they were, would this have been a big deal? Absolutely not. But the fight itself was exceptional. The other point I'll say is, like, all those things you say are absolutely right. And, like, you know, criticism of a nation state resulting in your accreditation been taken away, the failure, all of the above, absolutely. But if you're going to boxing looking for moral guidance, you're looking in the wrong box.
I should mention as well, by the way, but before we don't mention it, it was a breakout night for the Monaghan fighter Aaron McKenna. The card, the Smithborough man, he dominated Liam
Smith.
That's
more interesting.
This is, I know, it's a great story from Aaron McKenna as well. So he wins 119-108, 117-109, 118-108 on the judges' cards. Convincing win, 20 wins now in his unbeaten record. Drops Smith in the final round of the left hook to the body. So should mention Aaron McKenna's brilliant performance as well.
How's the romance in New Orleans?
Going well, in fairness. Not quite Mardi Gras, but it's petering along nicely. Defending champions Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry with a 5-shot deficit going into the final round of the Classic of New Orleans. They're in a tie for 6th place, are 22 under par after the first 3 days. American pair Lanto Griffin and Andrew Novak top the leaderboard and hold a 3-shot lead over their nearest challengers. Mentioned in the rugby as well, it's Energy All-Ireland League Finals Day with a doubleheader at the Aviva Stadium this afternoon. The men's Division 1A decider at 4 p.m. pits the holders Cork Constitution against Clontarf, with Conn hoping to become the first sides in Shannon's 3-in-a-row team to go back-to-back. Clontarf topped the standings during the regular season section of the league and are chasing their first title since 2022, while their under-20 team has already been crowned All-Ireland League champions this season. There's a 1:30 kickoff in the Women's League Final just got underway, where UL Bohemians defend their crown against Railway Union in a repeat of last year's decider. Railway unbeaten on their road to the Aviva, while UL Bows have lost just 2 games. Bows boss Fiona Hayes without Jane Clahasy and Aoife Corey, who both debuted, of course, for Ireland and Scotland yesterday. At Energia AIL updates brought to you by Energia. Think of the possibilities. And just finally, John mentioned the snooker as well. Of course, the action at the World Snooker Championships at the Crucible, which I've been watching keenly. So this morning, Joe Trump has finished 5-3 ahead of Sean Murphy in the race to 13 frames, best of 25 these matches. Zhao Jintong is through against his Chinese compatriot Lei Pai Fan, 13-10. Elsewhere yesterday, of course, Ronnie O'Sullivan finishing the first session 6-2 ahead of Pang Zhongzhu, the Chinese player. Luca Brasel, very dominant, 7-1 ahead of Ding Junhui after their first session. And Si Jiawei with a 5-3 lead over Ben Wollaston.
This weekend, treat yourself to Braeburn Coffee's irresistible hot chocolate at Apple Green. Whether you love classic milk or white hot chocolate, we're pouring perfect hot chocolates nationwide. Luxurious, smooth, cosy, and made for your perfect moment. I just want to mention William Mullins winning back-to-back UK trainers titles, because he's going to win the Irish one. He had, in the end, a 200 grand, figure over Dan Skelton, his big rival, to win the title. He had 38 winners from 204 runners. And Skelton had 179 winners from 996 runners. So Willie Mullins' season, including 10 Cheltenham Festival winners, a 1-2-3 in the Aintree Grand National, which is son Patrick Rode, the winner Nick Rocket, and the Scottish Grand National. It took 70 years for this to happen. UK title win after Vincent O'Brien. And for Willie to do it back-to-back is unbelievable achievement. So well done to everybody down at Close Sutton. We had the papers that you recorded earlier, Adrian, with the Sunday Independent journalist Declan Lynch, and the Sunday paper review with Jackie Shields as well, the former Irish rugby international. So lots of good writing. I'd say Liverpool, prominent.
Yeah, exceptional company. That Willie Mullins piece features on the front page of the Mail on Sunday sports section. Match of the day, fan?
Willie Mullins?
No, you.
Was.
Was. And our elapsed match of the day, fan.
I prefer the 3-minute highlights in Sky now.
We likened it today to the to religion, in the sense that, you know, people are attached to this thing, even though, you know, it doesn't fully serve the purpose that it once did, but it's something that your parents have done and it's been there in the background forever, and so people continue to watch it. Tommy Conlon writes about it in the Sunday Independent today, and it's a piece, it's a focus on Gary Lineker particularly. Sharpest intellect behind a bland pundit's persona is the piece. I mean, if you're not reading on after that headline, if the Bieber giving him the boot, it shouldn't hurt a job because his boots, unlike theirs, have always been golden. So it just gets into the complexities of Gary Lineker and a program that was built at a point in time to serve a very specific purpose because the games and the goals weren't available elsewhere, and has probably outlived its mandate, to be honest. But he's quite critical and quite scathing of Gary Lineker in the piece, it must be said. But that is one worth checking out today. As you said, a lot of writing about Liverpool across all the pages today. You have that piece from Tommy Conlon. And it's good stuff on obviously the week that was in the FAI and the outgoing chief football officer, Mark Hannam, a lot of writing about him. Paul Roan in the Sunday Times is a piece maybe I'll check, particularly because he's got some good detail on the non-renewal of the Eileen Gleeson and Colin Healy contracts, some new stuff, not necessarily earth-shattering, but just some good detail behind the scenes on that. And I'll go to Sinead Cassan in the Sunday Independent for a tip of the cap on the fallout from the rugby. Obviously, the not going our way against Scotland yesterday. And that's very disappointing from an Irish point of view. Sinead's piece sort of gets into all the details of it. She's very much a glass half full approach on the rugby. And there's like obviously a lot of work for Ireland to do now ahead of the World Cup. And there was plenty of injuries and plenty of reasons to be critical. And Jackie Shields certainly dips into some of those over the course of our chat today. But yeah, Sinead is kind of accentuating the positives out of this and saying that, like, you know, we've blooded players, got some good results, we've gone from 10th in the rankings to 5th, and life is not too bad.
Great stuff. You can hear a section of the pay-per-view on the FM here on News Talk later on after the Liverpool Spurs game, and you can check out the full pay-per-view wherever you get your pods if you're an Off the Ball subscriber. Enjoyed that, Adrian Barry and Shane Hannan. Thank you so much for the news round. Got to take a break. We're going to be back in a moment with the former Republic of Ireland international, Keith Tracy, to build up to our first Premier League commentary today, Bournemouth against Manchester United. Stay with us.